Hi, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Software Crafts Podcast. I'm your host, João, and today with me I have Jesse. Jesse is a QA engineer with more than 10 years turned into engineer manager with people well-being at heart. She works for a social conscious company, Ecosia, the search engine which plants trees. Hi, and thanks for your time to be with us today.
Hi, and thank you for having me.
No problem.
Very happy to be part of your podcast.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to have you with us. And we're going to deep dive into the heuristic. Today it's a pattern, and it's a very short one, but I imagine that you have a lot to tell about this. It's manage for creativity. So how do you manage for creativity?
Yeah, that's a good question. What I'm trying when I'm working with my team is really to give them freedom. But there is a lot of... I'm also a dancer on the side. So creativity is definitely also part of my thought process. And I also noticed that sometimes having restriction can bring more creativity to people, as well as total freedom can. So... I would say it really depends on the context. When we really need to think out of the box, the idea is really to just give as many insight as I can to my team so they can get a whole picture of what we want to achieve on a specific problem, for example, and just let them brainstorm, asking questions. As you were saying in my introduction, I've been QA for more than 10 years. And I think one of the big assets as QA is learning to listen and learning to ask questions. And I think that's also how you can help creativity, is just help people deep dive, and you ask questions on the idea that they have and how they can think out of the box from these questions and from the thought that they have. So, yeah, it's complicated. It depends on so many levels. If you're thinking also of managing a product team, if it's to deliver a product, or if it's finding also creative ideas for organization of your companies. Because, you know, right now the big term is disruptive. You want to be disruptive, so you need to be creative in the way you manage your team, on the way you create your organization. And I think we have tendency to rely a lot on pattern that already exists. We copy the Spotify model. We want to be like Google. And I think we never really add, in terms of organization either, the freedom or really think of by ourselves. Spotify did, and not so many other company did that well. And that is still a question I have for myself. How can I be more creative in the organization while still helping the team achieve their role and having enough support from everyone? So yeah. That's
your initial thought.
Yeah.
And I can imagine that, it's also part of the job, stepping in and helping a company like Ecosia to grow has a very special purpose. In part, I'm envious of you in terms of your challenge. It's a nice challenge. And you talk about restrictions or constraints to help people to have creativity. What type of restrictions or constraints do you put around the team to enable this creativity?
You always know that you know this triangle, cost, deadline, and resources, being people resources or resources as money. That are obviously constraints that you can put. But I think for me, especially as XQA, it's mostly the technical constraint that you have to bring into the equation. Like, we want to achieve that many users that many users who use our tool or our features, but at the same time, the changes that we want to make needs to be sustainable on the long run for scalability, for example. And the team has to think about a creative way to reach that level with the new feature, how they can attract more users, attract more customers in their future, but thinking also about the future. And that's challenging as well. And that's where I realized that's where I saw the most of out of the box thinking. I have an example when I used to work for Native Instruments as QA engineer. We wanted to develop a new feature for the tool Machina. But the UX designer had this big idea, okay, I want that to happen. But then but technically it's not feasible. And we just went all in a room, the UX designer, the developer, and me as QA, and we just thought, okay, what can we do technically that will make that feasible without breaking what already exists in the products? And that's where we had like really disruptive ideas on how to make that possible. And that was a new way of thinking our product, and that was a new way of also implementing in the development process. And that was really interesting. So this constraint that can be anything, that can be technical constraint that we have and we need to think about, can be time. We have the comm team said that the release will happen at that day, so we need to find a creative idea to reach the goal we put, like developing this new feature while keeping the quality and achieving the goal. So yeah, constraint can be of any sorts.
Okay, it's interesting that you bring this example where you have a technical constraint and then the team came up with collaboration, right? Everyone went to a room, different expertise, and you come with a solution and a creative way to come out. So thanks for sharing. And I was also curious, right? Because in the beginning, you said that the two skills that you have from your past as QA engineer is listen and ask questions, having these two superpowers that are very helpful now. But I was wondering if you ask questions in a different way now that you are managing a team.
I'd say yes, in a sense, because as manager of the team, I should not involve myself in the technical solution itself. I think it's the job and the opportunity of the engineer I'm working with to do that, and my job is to help them find these creative ideas. But it's not the same type of question I'm asking. As QA, my questions are more about and if it goes wrong, what can happen if it goes wrong, and if I do that, what will happen? So that was more the question I would ask. While as manager, my questions are more in the line of how can I support you? What are your brokers? Or when we are trying to find, it's more about organization brokers and thinking in larger picture. So sometimes there is something that does not allow them to solve a problem. Let's say for a feature, they can't go to the solution they want because there is a blocker. They are dependent on another team, etc. So my question would be, do you have dependencies? How can I alleviate these dependencies? Which is totally different of a question I would ask as QA would be more on the solution itself. It's not anymore on the organization, not anymore on the,
I can imagine, and that's why I ask this to get your thoughts how the questions change. And now also a personal question about your journey. How was this transition? What was your biggest Eureka moment, the haha moment when you transitioned from QA engineer being on solution part to being an engineer manager where you need to create conditions for people to succeed?
Well, in fact, it came from being part of the discussion about technical solution, realizing that we might have dependencies, structural, organizational dependencies that I have no way to change, no way to have an influence on. And as QA, for me, the most important thing, I know that QA are seen as people just coming after the developer saying, oh, you did wrong. That's absolutely not how I see this position. I think this position is an opportunity for both QA, for QA, PM, and developer to be better, to do better, to improve our skills. And when you see your position like that, when you see that you want to bring the best product ever in the end of your users, doing just testing is not enough. You need to support the developer. And I started to really appreciate supporting the developer and realizing that sometimes what they need is not my support, is not helping me, helping them review their code or anything, that it's really in the organizational or hierarchical side. QA is not enough. And when you're really passionate about enabling developers to do better and to bring the best in their job and for the end user, then for me, the transition kind of makes sense. It's in my mind, it's just part of being a QA. It's like, I'm making sure that the developer get a qualitative management and a qualitative architecture and qualitative support from the company, so they can bring the best product to the end user.
Yeah. I share with the same beliefs, and that we need a proper ecosystem. And I can see, well, the audience cannot see. I can, because I can see the passion in your eyes about these problems, which is awesome. And before you talk that companies try to copy models, and you reference a well-known copy model in our industry, Spotify model. Although Spotify doesn't use the model that is in the literature, and they said that was a thought experiment.
I know that.
Which is very interesting. We don't read the lines. Do you see that copying models from one company to another can harm the culture of the company?
I think if you want to push that without really thinking why this model is interesting for you and what you can gain from that model, yes, it will definitely harm your company. I saw that firsthand in different companies I worked with, where they pushed first for agile without really knowing why agile, and they were even trying to push agile on all level, even finance and people teams, without understanding why they needed that. And without even explaining them why they needed to make the transition. And then the next trend came up, which was the OKR, having OKRs, and they pushed that to the team the same without explanation why this would be useful or not. So I think copying it's not the problem of copying, because you always learn from more experienced than you, but copying without understanding why it would benefit your company and just because it's trending is, in my opinion, that will be harmful, because then it leads to distrust from the member of your company who will just think, okay, when there will be a new trend, they will just jump on it and we don't know why. And so you can copy, but you need to be really careful and to really understand the whereabouts of what you're copying.
Okay. Yeah. I can see myself was involved on as a developer in some of these top down pushing these models. So I definitely see the same problems. So I can state that context matters. I also come from domain driven design community, so we talk a lot about context. And I'm curious, how do you know what matters to your context? How do you know or have a feeling that this model will work over another organization model?
Of course, it's kind of a case by case, and I'd say it also depends on your business model and who are your end user. For example, I used to work in healthcare in the start of my career, and agile does not necessarily make sense because, for example, I'm as a QA, waterfall model makes more sense in healthcare because you need to have a proper process around testing. You need to have proper documentation and audit. Agile is all about communication, but less about documentation, which is a major part of healthcare regulation, for example. So if you introduce agile in this type of highly at-risk domain, it can really backfire and you can have really problems because normally in healthcare, for example, when you design something, you have to make sure that, for example, if you want to go to the American market, it follow the FDA requirements, and the FDA's requirements are really strict. You need to have a lot of documentation to review all of them, et cetera, et cetera. So agile doesn't make sense, for example, for such industry. If you're developing a website and it's just about giving newsletter, for example, you want to be fast. You want to have a fast delivery and a short feedback loop, for example. So agile would make sense. So I'd say it really depends on what's your target market, what's your end user, and yeah. Because all of these different models have strengths, and but they have strengths for a specific type of product or specific end user market.
Yeah, yeah, I definitely can see that. I'm personally a fan of Simon Wardley and Wardley Maps, where he states the same based on the evolution of your product/market, and also I use a lot from Kent Beck, the X3 model that talks exactly about where is your product and your market. And I'm curious because as software industry, we are a young industry, right? If we compare ourselves to, well, building a house or cooking or these type of industries, right? How can we learn not to jump to bandwagons? Because I think that is what we are talking about here, trends and bandwagons. How can we learn?
Honestly, I think it's very difficult because right now we are with our own market, we are pushing for speed. Just think about the live of a tweet on Twitter or a post on Instagram or Facebook, just to give an example, or news, just news, one news comes up and 2 hours after another one comes up. So it's very difficult to ask industry who make this change and change this paradigm. It's very hard to tell them, okay, now you just have to sit down and just wait and listen and wait for, I don't know, more experience around that topic. I have honestly no idea how we can make that happen.
Yeah. Well, I will challenge you. So it's not the first time that you use the word listen, right?
Mm.
Do you believe that we don't listen enough?
I think we don't listen enough. I think we are listening to say something afterwards. And that's the big difference. Listening is, it's not about hearing sound coming into your head and analyzing it. Hearing is really understanding what is being said and trying to understand and maybe have a bit of empathy depending on the subjects. It's not just about listening, and it's not about judging as well. It's not like you tell me something, you're telling me that you're sad because your cat is dead. My job is really to understand your pain, and what you're saying is not to say, oh, jump right after you finish your sentence. Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. You know, I also lost someone, and I know what that's, I feel, what's going on right now more and more is that people are, because our industry made that feasible, that everyone wants to be heard, everyone wants to be seen. So when you have the opportunity to be heard or to be seen, you jump on it. And I feel like now more and more, but I might be wrong and I hope I'm wrong, but I feel like more and more people are listening to say something and not listening to listens. And that's where for me there is like this, and that's, I see that I'm part of a community for manager, leaders, etc. And that's one of the questions I've been asked several times is, but what's your advice to manage your team and to have a sense of psychological safety, for example, in your team? Listen and not, do not judge, just listen and understand. And it seems so hard for so many people because it's super easy to say, yeah, listen. But the practice is not easy. And you can try yourself at home or you, Joe, you can try. It's just when someone tells you something, not to react, not to say anything about that. Just listen and trying to understand what they're saying. It's not that easy to just shut our thoughts and shut our willingness to find a solution or willingness to right away answer. It's very difficult.
I can imagine, and I was, because you were talking about the skill of listening, I was trying to remember the name of a person that has a workshop where the workshop is designed to learn how to listen. So people talk to you and you cannot react. It's Gitti Klickard. So she also had back in the day involved with Spotify. So, but she has this workshop related to the listening part. I think that is very relevant today, that we are so interconnected that we don't listen. And then came the psychology safety into teams. And I see, or at least start formulating in my head, as a manager, do you have, apart from listening, do you have any other tips to help with psychology safety with a team or even with the culture?
That's tricky. That's where you feel like heuristic is at play, because sometimes I'm just reacting on the moment based on the data that I get or what I hear from my colleagues. So I need to think about that. What do I do more?
Perhaps also your heuristics change from being in person to remote.
One of the things that I learned also on the job, because I started this position not so long ago, that my manager taught me, is not always trying to fix things right away. Because sometimes when you're in one-on-one with your with the engineer you're working with, or they can have eruptive feelings that they want to share, where listening is important. But then when I was saying listening and not trying to find a solution or to react, and I'm still working on that, I'm not great at that either, is to, yeah, not try to fix everything right away, because sometimes they're adults and they can find the solution themselves. And that's where we go back to creativity, sometimes not giving it guidance also for them to find a solution that would work for them. If I come and I just give them handbooks of how to run books on how to solve the issue, maybe my solution or my way of handling the solution, the problem, will not be the one that fits how they work or how they see the world sometimes, or their personality. So yeah, learning passivity, I don't know if it's the right word, honestly. Yeah. It's not really passivity, but I guess it's also a sense of trust, trusting your colleague that they will sometimes find the proper solution on their own, and just making ensuring that they know that if it's not the case and they can't find the solution on their own, you will be here always and always have their back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you are giving, well, a few episodes ago, we had Lisa Crispin, and I also asked about what can we learn from donkeys, because donkeys are her trademark. And she told that is trust. It's a fundamental cornerstone within a team. And I notice now a trend. Trust also pops up. So it's very, very interesting. And also I don't know who told this, but someone told that to being a manager is to help people in the journey. It doesn't matter the final destination, it's about providing the journey. I'm not a manager, I'm as consultant, but I can relate to that, provide journeys to people or to companies. How about the future of our industry? What is your wish? If you had a glass ball, where do you like that the industry could go?
For me, we should really, really emphasize on inclusive leadership and empathy and psychological safety in the team. I really feel like, and trust, and having more trust also. I remember when I was QA, I hated feeling like my manager was telling me what to do, because I'm an adult and I got my my degrees and I had years of experience. So having someone who was not doing my job day to day coming and telling me what to do was really, really annoying. And I think the industry will just really learn and thrive on teaching their manager how to be manager. I think, yeah, for the future of this industry, I wish people understand that management role is not something that you have in you. It's something that you can learn. And when you want to bring someone in this position, you should give them the tool to succeed in their role and not assume that because they were a good tech, it means that they will be a good manager. That's not true. That's not always true. And if it happens just because that person was already had already good soft skills or already trained themselves on their own. And yeah, and a topic which is obviously very, very dear to my heart is diversity and inclusion and equity, obviously. I think we can't move forward in our industry if we forget more than half of the population of the world. And we need to remind ourselves that we are creating projects for users and our users are diverse. And if we want to make sure to answer to their problematics, we need to have those perspectives, those diverse perspectives inside the companies. It's not enough to just go to one user interviews once in a while with a woman or with a black person or with a Muslim or with a disabled person or someone who is not the overrepresented character in our industry. It's not enough. You need to have these people inside your companies. You need to involve them, because also we were talking about creativity. Creativity comes also from different perspectives. And if you don't bring them, you will never know that you missed creative ideas.
Thanks for sharing. Once again, I could see your passion. And I deeply believe on that, although, well, I'm a white man, so I'm on the other spectrum of the problem. But the best years that I had before being consultant was building teams where we brought diversity, and that the diversity of backgrounds, diversity on formal education versus non-formal education, is well, probably the best teams that I work and the best company that I work so far. And I see a lot of a cloning pattern in our industry that, well, let's break the cycle. And we are getting towards the end of the interview, although we are getting to the best part, discussing the future or your wishes. And what are the resources that you recommend for people to continue discover by themselves about the what we discussed today?
In terms of listening, I would say go to look for nonviolent communications. I think there is a website, nonviolent communication, and train how to do that, because it teaches you how to listen, and it teaches you also how to speak to someone and communicate in a productive manner. That's one of the tools I always recommend. After, there is always this book that the manager I have tendency to work with or to talk to recommends. It's Radical Candor by Kim Scott. Very interesting for any manager or want to be a manager. Radical Candor, about how to be true also to yourself. Like literally bringing your whole self at work and how to communicate feedback, not shying away also from difficult conversation. Other than that, well, I would obviously suggest you to go to ecosia.org and learn how we plant trees and how we are trying to fight the climate crisis with our products. And yeah. Yeah, I on that level, yes, I think that would be the resources I would suggest. I'm thinking of additional one, but that's the one I'm using the most. Another one, a tool called Bunch. It's a company called Bunch.ai for anyone who is interested into management, leadership, or simply learning how to be working with a group of people. They have this community called Teams at Work, where manager, leaders, and again, people who want to work with group meets, and we just talk about our human problem and our organizational problem. And they also have this tool. It's a iPhone one, and it gives you tips. It's under 2 minutes of read or 2 minutes of listening. And if you have a problem or question, you just ask the tool and it will find you tips to help you resolve or go through this challenge. And it was very key for me as a new manager to have this type of tool with me, because you not always have someone with more experience that can give you advices. Especially, for example, for Ecosia, my position was a new one, so I could not necessarily go to someone and ask, how did you do your job? How can I do my job properly? So this tool was really, really helpful. And it's really gave when I was saying for the future of the industry to have manager who learned the job, I think these are the type of tools that change the game on that sense.
Awesome, awesome. I will make sure that all of these resources are on the description of the episode, so people can reach out. Also, your Twitter handler will be on the description, so also people can reach out to you for tips. I definitely will, because I want to learn more. And with this, we reach the end of the episode. So I want to say a big thank you to give your time to the show. It was awesome to have you.
Thanks. It was really a pleasure to be here and to talk with you about these topics.
Okay. Thanks. You can follow us on Twitter at @SCraftsPodcast. Visit our website, softwarecraftspodcast.com, or follow our page on LinkedIn, Software Crafts Podcast. See you next week. Thank you.